Some podcasts inspire their listeners. Some podcasts address important current events. Some podcasts make the world a better place. The Fish Golf Broadcast does the opposite, so buckle up for half an hour of wasted time. On this episode of the Fish Golf Broadcast, I caught up with the bazooka, Albert Tam. Albert, what you thinking about?
Nothing at this point.
All right. So for context, we are near the end of the 2023 season. We're in September. And this is not your first rodeo, so to speak, here in the U.S.
Yeah, this is my second full year on tour, I would say. Last year was my first one, and before that I've been doing like maybe like 2 or 3 months tops at a time.
Sure. And this year, like last year, you have an RV.
Yeah.
That's outfitted for yourself, and you've been traveling mostly alone during that time, right?
Yeah, this year mostly alone. Last year I had a little bit more company, but like I've had some little bit of company here and there throughout the season.
Sure. So you are actually the first non-American guest that I've had on this show.
So
I would love to give you an opportunity to maybe give the European perspective on what you thought the U.S. might be like, whether that's geography or food or language or anything else about people, and what you've learned that that was or was not like.
So the first time I came to the U.S. was 2019. And I flew into LA. I was with Linus Carlsen, Håkon Kveset from Norway, and his friend Anders. So we flew in there. We got like an RV for four of us. And I think the first impression was like, I'm in the Grand Theft Auto game. Like that really felt like the game. I played like Miami Vice and those games. And I was like, we went to the dealership where we got the RV from, and like just the playlist that was playing in the radio, I was like, this can't be real. Like, this is like just like the same thing as in the game. And maybe one thing also is like some of the stuff we see from the movies is like literally standard life here. So it's like, it seemed so far away. And when I got here, I was like, this is actually how, like, these movies actually show how like the standard life is. So it was like, that's the first thing that comes into my mind when I compare it to movies I see.
Sure. And at that point, is that 17 or 18 years old?
I think I was like 20 or 21, something
okay,
like
okay.
that. Yeah.
So potentially not a whole lot of like travel experience. Those movies or popular culture might be your best source of that.
Yeah.
Okay. And by now you figured it out. You know that it's more than a day's drive across the country.
Yeah, I think like I heard the stories about how straight the roads are, like, and I think driving from like Midwest to Cali, you really feel those that roads are really straight through some stretches. So it's like just straight for 10 hours and straight again for 10 hours, pretty much.
Yep, that'll happen.
Yeah.
So I would love for you to give me and the rest of our wealthy, brilliant audience an opportunity, or the reasons why we should be paying attention to Estonian disc golf. You held was it European Championships in Estonia this year?
Yeah. So there are a lot of potential ones coming up that have the potential to be on tour, I think.
Like players, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I would say when it comes to running event, the one where we had the venue we had for the European Championships, that's maybe one of the only venues I felt like, oh, this is like really insane experience for a spectator. It's an enclosed area. And for players, we were like gated off with, I don't know how to say, portable gates.
Okay.
And like we were so separate from the spectators, so we had like all on our area, and spectators had their own area, and at the same time, spectators had the freedom to bounce from hole to hole and just like, I don't know, I'm on hole 10, but oh, hole 7 is right here. I can pop there, watch some of my favorite players there. And the compactness of it was something I felt like as a spectator, I could feel, I don't know, I'm getting most out of my money, pretty much.
Sure.
And as a player, I felt like whenever I, didn't really matter what card I played on. I already, like, every time I was on the course, I felt like there's already some people there. Like, just maybe, like, just bouncing around or maybe following my card specific. And also, I don't know how to put it, but, like, when your fairway is surrounded by banners, that gave a little different feeling also. I don't know. Yeah, it's like just seeing endless of banners felt a little different too.
Okay, and I guess we see that a little bit on the Pro Tour or at the European Open.
Yeah.
But I guess it's unique to have spectator and player rounding that's pretty independent. Like right now, I think unless you're say at Maple Hill with the 8 holes, mm-hmm. or the Preserve Championships where you'll be on a bench behind hole 9 or something, there's this expectation that you show up and you mostly get to follow the card that you want to the entire way. And some places that works pretty well when there's a lot of open space and they can cram, you know, several spectators deep along every fairway. How do you feel like Europe and or Estonia are advancing that spectator-player relationship?
I feel it's a little better here. Like, let's say having tickets for the events. This is still relatively new to us, I feel. And here it has been in place for a little bit more than 2 years, perhaps. Or maybe even more. But I feel like people are getting more accustomed to it and, like, are more willing, perhaps, to spend the money to come watch.
Yeah.
And also maybe like the operation stuff have more experience thanks to that also, that they have had that same system in place for a little bit longer, so they are better at managing the crowd and, like, you know, just having this no boundary of step over, like when it's a no or something like this. I don't know how to put it, but like, yeah, I feel like that could be the one where US one has like a little bit of more just experience on. But I feel like Europe is getting to that part too, where we're starting to charge for coming to watch players. And I feel also from that money, we can also elevate the spectator experience as well. Like, it won't be just watching disc golf. There can be like some disc golf arcade games close by the player area or like the main tournament central, sure. Something like that.
So believe it or not, in 2016 or 17, when Steve Dodge had just begun the Pro Tour, he was trying to create that big fan experience by having like a pyramid of baskets or a whole bunch of swinging baskets that you could, you know, pay $2 and try and you win a prize or something, just like you're at the Carnival Sideshow.
Yeah.
And I think at that point there wasn't the like truly developed player base that would attract spectators, and it still was new to play or to pay to go watch disc golf.
Yeah.
So I wonder if like Europe is kind of at that point where there will be that sideshow element.
I'm not sure on this. I think it will be largely dependent on the whoever the crew is who is putting up the event, because like here you have the same crew putting up the event every event pretty much, but mm-hmm. like in Europe it's more separated. I feel like every place has its own staff that puts up an event and has a vision for the event. So I'm not sure where we are at this stage, but I feel the guys who organized the European Championships, they have that vision in mind that also the spectators get the most out of their money.
Okay. Well, neat. I have not yet been to Europe. I would be delighted to. It always seems like everyone who goes comes back talking about how great it has been to be there. You took maybe a month and a half or so to stay at home during, or in Europe, closer to home, during the European Championships as well as the European Open. Did you play some other stuff while you were over there?
I played Elite Series in Norway before the European Open, and I played Estonian National Championships and Aldogus Open as a New York Tour before the European Championships.
Okay.
Yeah.
And as I understand it, there's several kind of competing tours occurring in Europe right now.
Yeah.
Can you break it down pretty simply for who's running each of those, what the strengths and weaknesses might be, without getting your own self in trouble?
So I think for the most part, there's European Pro Tour and Euro Tour. I think European Pro Tour is solely for the NPO and FPO. Euro Tour may have other divisions here and there also in the mix. But yeah, kind of like those are the main two that divide the schedule. And I heard there's like little, I don't know, butting heads here and there, like because the time is pretty small for, no, the disc golf time is pretty small in Europe because of the seasons. So I think the season starts like late March or perhaps April and it ends in, I don't know. It's kind of wrapping up there, I feel, at this point. So the season is pretty short. The weekends are limited and everybody wants to have those high spots. And yeah, I guess there's like, I don't know, a little bit of divide and conquer happening, I think. But I think they're figuring it out. And also, I think Pro Tour had a couple events this year. So perhaps when we count Pro Tour also in, it's also a tour happening. But I think one thing I'm happy with, like glad over, is that the Euro Tour and European Pro Tour point, like you can earn points for disc golf Pro Tour by playing Euro Tour and Euro Pro Tour. So I think I like the fact that they have some unity, and I feel they will get more unified as the years go along.
Sure. It's so difficult to figure that out in real time too. I've been playing long enough to remember the Disc Golf World Tour competing with the Disc Golf Pro Tour when neither was really that much of a thing. And the National Tour, which wasn't much of a tour, it was kind of just like spread out in both time and place.
Mm-hmm.
And it took several years for that to get resolved and the Pro Tour to emerge as more or less the winner, as the vendor of the Elite Series for mm-hmm. the PDGA in the U.S.
Yeah, I think like the Euro Tour is like run by like PDJ Europe in a way, and then Euro Pro Tour is run by private persons.
Okay, which both of those may or may not have advantages and disadvantages in, you know, who they can cater to and what kind of partnerships they can take on.
Yeah,
I don't mean to have been rude when lumping you in with other European players.
Mm-hmm.
As I understand it, national pride is a big deal to Estonians and Finns and Swedes. Can you talk a little bit about what that's like when you're getting to compete in your home country in the European Championships?
That was something that made me really nervous because it's like at home and like, of course, winning in front of the home crowd would have been probably one of the best experiences I could ever ask for. But I'm glad that I was able to pretty much come through it and like just enjoy myself on the course and, you know, focus on the things I have in my control and whatnot. So, but I think I hope that one day, whether it's European Championships or something bigger, to just have that opportunity again to play in front of the home crowd and perhaps take home a win or something. That would be, I think, a moment I will probably never forget. Because I can bring you an example. During the final round of European Championships, I went to the tee and the announcer was, I don't know, announcing me.
Sure.
And then he was interrupted by a big applause by the gallery. And that was like something I will probably never forget. Yeah.
Do you know a lot of those players, like or spectators? Have you built a relationship with them when you're back during the winter?
There's probably a lot of new fans there, but like a lot of people I kind of like know, or at least I've seen the face. The disc golf community is growing bigger and bigger, but I feel the people that I started out with, I still like, even if I don't see them for 3-4 years, I still, when I see them, I still, you know, have a good time with them. So it was cool to see a lot of old faces and some newer ones that maybe I have bumped into like in the last few years.
Mm-hmm. I'm Kat Merch and I listen to the Fish Golf Broadcast while I drive multiple hours into the abyss.
I'm Connor O'Reilly, and I listen to the Fish Golf Broadcast while I wait for my boba.
If you like where this show is headed, stick around for part two. We'll never barrage you with 11 minutes of droning external ads to start the show. So please support the Fish Golf Broadcast by visiting discgolfbra.com for hats and other apparel. Fish stamp discs are available at fishdiscgolf.com and daddydiscgolf.com. And you can save 10% on upperparkdiscgolf.com with the code Andrew10 on backpacks and other items. And now, more lies and outrageous claims from our guest, met with calm reason by Fish.
So Albert, you and I played round three together at the Preserve Championships, and you ended up climbing several strokes back into the cache. Which was really, really cool. And especially since on Saturday evening, you and I had spoken quite a bit about, you know, the mental struggles of like talking yourself into throwing shots. And that's something that every golfer or disc golfer has to deal with at some point, like the little mental slumps as well as physical slumps. I think it's a really underappreciated part of the pro players' experience, is just like how much work you have to put in to be ready to play mentally and emotionally. Can you walk us through a little bit about what that journey has been like for yourself this year, and what resources you've referred to improve yourself?
I think this is like part of the game that constantly, like, let's say we're having this discussion right here, but maybe in the next few weeks, I would have different answers, because, like, you know, it's constant journey and you discover new aspects and also learn about yourself during these tournament situations. So I work with Risto Neyland. He's like a mentor for me back home, and like we have been working with him from 2019 pretty much. And this year I came part of a group called the Contriber. So that's like focusing on the self development and following like a, like, I'm not sure if it's study or like maybe like philosophy of Theo Morris. So he's like, he goes more in depth about like some of the Toltec teachings and ways of life. And I feel like those have been helping me to improve as a player, but also as a person. And like, I feel everything is connected. So like, I can't improve only as a player. I have to improve as a person. So I feel like a lot of new experiences outside the course can also help the game on the course.
Can you give an example of that?
I don't really have like a really good example at this point. I feel like just, I can put it like this. So if I have some unfinished business outside disc golf, they probably also come with me to the disc golf course. And I feel that, like, maybe those have been a couple examples where when I have acted out outside the course the way that feels right to me and things resolve, it also helps on the course. Like, I don't know, it gives me more self-confidence that, like, if I act the way that feels right, is it's gonna work out. Like maybe not all the times, but I know that I acted like the way I should have, and there's always a chance that even if you act the most impeccable, that, you know, maybe it doesn't work out with the result you expected.
Sure. And like a really reductive example of that would be if you didn't go grocery shopping or didn't do your laundry, and while you're trying to throw an upshot, 10% of your brain is occupied by those two things.
Yeah.
But like more seriously, it's like if you went to bed mad after getting in a fight with a friend, like you're probably going to take that with you to the course the next day.
Yeah. And I'm not sure, like there's so many I have a lot of thoughts about this topic. Is like, you know, you should be able to separate those two things and like just at the course do your thing. But I feel like disc golf is like we have so much time, like eventually those thoughts will probably creep in there. So it's like, and also it's how do you manage your thoughts? I feel like that's one thing too. Like you can have all sorts of thoughts, but like they don't have to really determine your actions. And same goes with the feel of probably fear and whatever. And yeah, I think those are the ones where when you have more awareness about it, you can probably act more impeccable, that maybe bring you perhaps a better result after throwing a shot.
Sure. And calling back to the European Championships that you described in our first segment of this podcast, you were kind of talking about how important it seemed to try to put on a good performance, because that was like your home country and your home spectators. Mm-hmm. And I guess it sounds like you were able to channel the like potential for nerves into something good, like an opportunity, rather than letting that become fear.
Yeah. I had like a pretty simple plan, or just a thought or mantra to keep in mind, is like, you know, only thing I'm trying to do here pretty much is just to pick the best, like make the best decision for the best result for me. Like, and only I know what are the best decisions for best result for me. Like maybe it's laying up, maybe it's, yeah, throwing some crazy hyzer line, I don't know. But only I know what are those decisions that have the highest probability for best result for me. Yeah, that was the thing that I was just focused on. And I wasn't fully able to keep it fully in there, like all through four rounds. I had like little lapses here and there. And I think those lapses kind of like teach you a little something. Okay, you figured out like a little something, but there's maybe something bigger on the background that can be affecting those other decisions a little bit. Or like, I don't know, when the, let's say, stakes get a little higher, that's maybe where those other things really finally pop out. And it's like that current working plan crumbles and you need to like start to work on the bigger thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So I suspect that with the guided training you've been doing, there's a lot of focus on not solving the problem, but on giving yourself strategies to solve the problem.
Yeah, I feel like I would call them like tools. Like nothing in life is like fixed. I would say only constant in life, I think it's a good saying, is change. Mm-hmm. And you know, the more tools we have, the better we are to adapt with things. And the more tools I have, like I have this, I don't know, funky situation, I try one thing, okay, it doesn't work out, then I have another one, and like I can just finally find one that works out. And maybe if I don't, then I have the information that doesn't work out. And maybe I can, from that information, I can maybe create something that maybe works out. And from that, I have, again, a new tool to use in the future.
And the same can kind of be true of skill development, right? Like, yeah, if you discover that, man, I'm really having trouble with like an ante release, you have to go drill that. And when you uncover the pattern of like what your mental state is, it might be it might be over the course of several rounds or several tournaments that you figure out how to put yourself in that right state or that right preparation.
Yeah, I think, like, for me, like, we're at MVP at this point, and one thing I talked with Simon about it a little bit, and I got a, like, idea that, like, maybe I'm just trying to understand too much before doing actually things. So I was like, huh, let's try this term and just do like it. I don't need to have the full understanding what I'm gonna do, but just do.
Can you go a little deeper into what you mean by that? I hope not to, like,
so, like,
ruin
much,
it for
you. How to say? So maybe, like, to gather all the information before I make my shot. So let's say, okay, what is the wind? What is the distance? What is the slope? Like, that's all information. And, like, sometimes I feel like I am getting in a loop where I start gathering, like, a lot of information. But eventually, I'm not going to do anything with that information. So I'm not really using it to make perhaps a better shot or something. And this one,
you can't build the perfect shot.
Yeah.
At some point, you have to...
You have to make a decision what you're going to do.
And then just let the reps and your unconscious brain solve all the trigonometry for you.
Yeah, like, you have made a decision and now it's time to execute. So I've been focusing, like, shifting the perception a little bit, that I will, instead of, like, gathering that information, I kind of, like, know, like, that I think where the prep comes in a little bit too, is, like, I kind of know what I need to do and, like, how I need to throw, and this, like, just, like, do it. Nike. So yeah, that's, like, has been a little shift for me, and I don't know, everybody has, like, I feel, their own little fun tweaks and stuff, and maybe, yeah, for me this week has been, like, not trying to really understand everything that I'm doing, just, like, do, and even if I don't understand, still do.
Do you have to give yourself grace when that doesn't work out? Like,
There were, like, a couple times a day where I got into the loop a little bit again. Like, especially, like, yeah, I did, and it didn't really work out. And I was like, oh, maybe I should have gathered, like, more information. But I was like, hey, this is like you go back to the same old thing, but not really fully committing to the new thing. And I think it's, like, pretty easy to fall back on those things, like, when it's not working out, pretty easy to switch back to the one that's not good, but it's not bad. You know, so it's like, I feel like I'm gonna take a little bit more leap of faith on those things, like, just, you know, it's okay. Like, I was glad that I was able to notice that I was starting getting into loop and, like, really starting to, like, analyze things too much.
Like you said, the awareness.
Yeah. It's like, hey, okay, this is it. Like, okay, let's keep the thing doing like we're doing and just, like, throw it, pretty much. Yeah.
Well, that's neat. What's left on your tournament schedule for this year?
So I will be wrapping up things with the USDC, and then I'll be heading home, and I'll probably be back in the US around January. I'll be mostly in Florida area, I feel, and I will probably be doing some clinics, or I'll be at events vending there during the weekends, and during the week I will probably focus on my training.
Okay, great. If folks are interested in supporting your tour or finding information on those clinics, where's going to be the best place for them to search for that?
So the most active channel I have is Instagram. So that's probably going to be where I'll have the most up-to-date data.
What's your username?
Albert Tam, just written together.
Great.
And I have a website, alberttam.com. That also, if you don't have Instagram or anything, you can find my all the channels from there, and you will have my tour schedule and everything up there. And yeah, if you're looking to support me through discs, Latitude Factory Store is a great way for it, and then blackinkdiscs.com.
Excellent. Well, if you hated this podcast, that's also the best way for you to find Albert. And if you enjoyed the podcast, you can find me on whatever Twitter is and Instagram at fish58320. Albert, can you close us out with a message to your Estonian disc golf fans?
Namaral.
That's all for this episode of the Fish Golf Broadcast. But be sure to check out previous episodes and subscribe wherever fine podcasts are sold. Check out Fish Golf Broadcast hats and other apparel at discgolfbra.com and badger your friends until they listen too. Join us next time as I goad yet another guest into starting a fight with another touring player, campsite host, or toll booth attendant on the Fish Golf Broadcast.